Okay, Anthony Compton, the prospect of leadership. Jean Carrigan, who has been writing brilliantly recently and is very engaged in this crisis, the Taoiseach made a 7,200-word speech this week, and Jean Carrigan points out that it was a con job. He says, and I'm quoting him exactly, "Here's an example of how Mr. Cowan rigged the deck. In his long-winded speech, he had to show he was not alone in misreading the economy as Minister for Finance. He quotes at length from the incompetent fools who misled him. These include the bloody eejits at the IMF, the stupid gobshites at the OECD who fooled him by heaping praise on his pre-collapse policies. Then a few pages later, he sets out to prove that his current feed the banks and starve the economy strategy is the right one. So he quotes at length from those insightful masterminds at the IMF and the absolute geniuses at the OECD as they heap praise on his current policies." It's a wonderful piece of journalism that demolishes that speech in four sentences.
Yes. Well, whatever about Mr. Cowan's tenure of the Department of Finance, in my opinion, he and his finance minister, Brian Linehan, made a disastrous mistake and error when, September 2008, they gave this blanket guarantee to the banks. They were quite right to guarantee the deposits in the banks, the savings which ordinary citizens put into them, but they went much beyond that. They guaranteed and put the weight of the Irish state behind all the people from whom the banks had borrowed, the creditors of the banks, foreign banks mostly. And these people, the foreign banks in the main, had lent to the Irish banks over the years to invest in the Irish property market. And they did very well while the Irish property market was booming. Then the property market collapsed, and the two Bryans, Mr. Cowan and Mr. Linehan, stepped in and guaranteed not just, as I said, the savings of Irish citizens, which is fair enough and should have been done, otherwise there would have been a run on the banks. They guaranteed the bank, the creditors of the banks, the bondholders, the foreign banks who lent to the Irish banks, and said, "We'll guarantee all your debts," and virtually everything that's happened since, NAMA and so on and so forth, arises from that fatally flawed decision. Now, Mr. Cowan, and he was Minister of Finance, presumably he was advised by the Department of Finance, but the recent Secretary of the Department of Finance, the most man has come into it recently, was complaining about the lack of economic expertise in that department a bit late in the day. Brian Linehan, whom I knew in Trinity College as a lawyer, was just new to his job. He didn't know much about economics at the time. I'm sure he knows a lot more now. And of course, they were confronted by Mr. Dermot Leeson, the chairman of Irish and at Irish banks, on behalf of the banks, urging them to give this blanket guarantee to all the people from whom the banks had borrowed, and the two Bryans went along. And it was a disastrous decision, in my opinion. And as you know, the current inquiries into the banks are supposed not to look at that particular decision. I am an optimist, but for different reasons, I think, from the other people around the table. I'm an optimist because in the last few weeks, as you know, you have the European currency crisis, and I've always believed that joining the euro currency and adopting the euro in 1999 was the biggest mistake the Irish state ever made. And I'm very happy man in the last few weeks, because I think this is becoming more and more obvious, and the penny is dropping with significant sections of Irish public opinion that it's a disastrous decision.
Why?
I was in Sweden last weekend in Stockholm, and the Swedes, of course, are members of the European community. They're in the European Union. But they're delighted. They're outside the Eurozone. The Eurozone, which uses the euro, consists of 16 of the 27 EU countries. There are 11 states outside the Eurozone.
Why is it a disaster for us, Anthony?
It's disastrous for us because, as you know, when you don't have a currency of your own, you have no control over either your rate of interest, which is the price of money, or your rate of exchange, the money in relation to other currencies. So we gave up that. And by giving up control over the rate of interest, we encouraged the borrowing binge. We already had a boom in the late 90s. We then joined the Eurozone. We halved interest rates when we joined it. Dr. John Fitzgerald of the SRI, Gareth Fitzgerald's son, said we'll have permanently lower interest rates. Well, permanently lower interest rates are not good policy when you've got a boom. So we halved interest rates. That encouraged the borrowing binge.
Okay.
But much more importantly than that, we're now caught because we joined an area with which we do only one third of our trade. And so the British are outside it. They can devalue their currency and restore their competitiveness. The Swedes are doing the same. The Danes are doing the same. The Poles and other EU members are also able to do that. We can't, because we're caught in the Eurozone by this disastrous decision, and we're now realizing it.
Okay.
The Dumfries Show on News Talk 106 to 108.
Oh, Poland, many other countries are in the EU but not in the Eurozone, and they're very glad. And Mr. Cardinal said, you know, we'd be a basket case if we hadn't joined the Eurozone. How can that be so? The Swedes aren't a basket case. The Danes aren't a basket case. Mm-hmm. We only do one-third of our trade with the Eurozone countries. Now the countries outside are devaluing, increasing their competitiveness, and we are stuck. While the pound sterling goes down and Irish shoppers go north of the border, and as the
dollar
goes down...
But we don't have the resources of Sweden or the Nordic countries.
The biggest boom in our history was between 1993 and the early 2000s, the only period in the history of the Irish state when we in effect floated the currency and had an independent currency regime for the first time. And the disaster of the Eurozone is now being underlined. You can't run a monetary union without having common tax and services. Okay. And those don't exist and will not exist.
Okay, we're going to take another break. Now, just before we do, some of your comments, don't worry, Eamon, the Indo will be back attacking and demonising the public sector workers next week. And ask Bridget Laffan where all the jobs and the economic recovery we were promised during the Lisbon 2 treaty referendum. William says all this positive talk and Brian Cowan coming over all touchy-feely. For God's sake, are we turning into California? I wish we would. We're going to take an outbreak now, and then we're going to come back and talk some more to our guests this morning, Richard Curran, Bridget Laffan, Gina Menzies, and Anthony Coughlin. And we're going to talk to Alistair Campbell, the great man who had a fight on television this week. Something quite unseemly.
The Dumphy Show on News Talk 106 to 108.
News Talk.
The Dumphy Show on News Talk 106 to 108.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. At the end of a week when the European crisis deepened, with the euro slumping to an 18-month low against the dollar, as markets derided the $750 billion ECB rescue package designed to reinforce the eurozone's credibility. A small riot outside Leinster House made big headlines. Archbishop Dermot Martin spoke of strong forces suppressing the truth about clerical child sex abuse. With me on the programme this morning to talk about those matters and other matters are Richard Curran, Deputy Editor of the Sunday Business Post, Professor Bridget Laffan, College Principal at the UCD College of Human Sciences, Gina Menzies, Lecturer and Religious Affairs Commentator, and Anthony Coughlin, Director of the National Platform for EU Research and Information. And, of course, Anthony is an ardent sceptic about the European project. Professor Laffan is an ardent supporter. Richard Curran, famously in April of 2007, delivered a television programme on RTE called Future Shock about the property bubble. He was criticised at the time, but it was a brilliant piece of journalism and has proved very prophetic. We love you to contact us on the show. You can do so by texting 53106. That will cost 30 cents. You can low-call us on 1890 453106, or you can email dunphy@newstalk.ie. You can also follow The Dunphy Show on Twitter and on Facebook, so sign up and become a friend. Now, we go to Berlin, where Roger Boys, who is the Times Germany and Eastern European correspondent, waits to say. Good afternoon, Roger.
Hello, good afternoon.
Thank you very much for joining us. We have in front of us a piece that you wrote in the Times about the sentiment of the German people in relation to the euro and indeed the whole EU project. Tell us exactly how much trouble Angela Merkel is in. It's said in the Sunday Times today, for example, that she's battered as Germans lose faith in the EU.
Yeah, I mean, the splash headline of the mass tabloid Bild-Zeitung was calling yesterday for the restoration of the German mark. 56% or 58% of Germans apparently want that now. It's got quite deep, this feeling that Germany should no longer be the paymaster of Europe. And that's how they see themselves. And they're, of course, questioning the very essence of the European Monetary Union. You know, they're saying, why should the northern countries pay for the southern countries? Or rather, as they put it, the lazy habits of the southern countries. And all of this is building up into an immense popular groundswell of discontent, which Merkel, Chancellor Merkel, can't really cope with.
What about the political and media elite, the academics, for example, who do they share this sentiment, or are they beginning to see the realpolitik of it?
Yeah, I mean, you've got a group of professors who've gone to the Constitutional Court to say that bailing out Greece would be in direct contradiction to the German Constitution and to the Maastricht Treaties.
It has to go to the Constitutional Court, does it not, Roger?
Yes, it's gone to the Constitutional Court. Constitutional Court has ruled that that aid for Greece shouldn't be delayed immediately, but they're considering it now. They're considering the whole petition over the next couple of months, and so that might well end up tripping up the Chancellor.
What are the opposition saying? I mean, I know there's a coalition government there. Is there an opposing political faction that could come into power that would bow to the popular mood?
Well, the opposition are mainly the Social Democrats, and it was a Social Democrat government that let Greece in the first place, or at least, you know, nodded Greece through when the EU sat down to think about it. So they don't have great credibility, but what they're doing, of course, is just banging the drum, saying you can't have a situation where you're demanding that Germans close down their swimming pools and their public libraries and their kindergartens in order to pay for the profligate habits of the Greeks and perhaps the Portuguese.
It defies common sense, Roger, does it not, to think that the Germans can go on paying?
Yeah, of course.
And retiring a lot later than others.
Yeah, I mean, the Germans are already retiring at 60, you know, their retirement age is 67 now. And they're confronted daily by German tabloid reports saying that, for example, unmarried daughters in Greece can inherit the pensions of their policeman fathers. You know, if their father was a policeman and he dies, they inherit the pension, you know. And it's just completely like on a different planet. And they're saying, well, you know, what kind of union is this? We're operating on different values.
My colleague here, Richard Curran, would like to ask you a question, Roger.
Yeah, Roger, I was just going to say, one of the issues within the kind of real politic of all this is that Germany itself and German banks are owed a lot of money by these Southern European economies, you know, the ones that many Germans feel have behaved recklessly and shouldn't really be bailed out. But Germany is owed billions by these countries, including ourselves.
Yes, that's right, of course. I mean, and that's ultimately why the government has to act as it's doing, because of the not just the contagion effect, but the cross-fertilization, you know, and the massive amount that's owed to German banks.
Is there any sense in Germany that people are aware of that, or do they see it simply as, you know, we're giving out handouts and nothing more than that?
Well, if you ask the ordinary German, he'll say, well, we've already bailed out the banks. And frankly, the ordinary German is already in a kind of hostile relationship with the banks. And he doesn't see the logic of masses of taxpayers' money flowing southwards in order to protect German banks. That doesn't gel for him. Yeah? It's not that the German banks are automatically and emotionally protected by ordinary Germans, because they think, oh, well, the German banks, therefore they're part of us, they're part of the nation, we have to do our best for them. It's rather, my God, you know, all the money is going down the plug hole. I think they're right, to be honest.
Okay, Roger, thank you very much for joining us. That's Roger Boys, who's the Times Germany and Eastern European correspondent.
The Dumfries Show on News Talk 106 to 108.
Anthony Cochrane?
Well, the EU is one thing, the single currency is another. As I said earlier on, there are only 16 states in the single currency. The 11 outside, or most of them, are delighted they're out and not under these pressures. The German people were never consulted about giving up the Deutsche Mark. They had no referendum in Germany. Public opinion was very much against it. It was pushed by the political elites. And what the current situation shows is a gulf, a pull between the peoples of Europe, including the German people, and the political elites. The Eurocrats, the political elites in the various member countries, including in Ireland and the people in Brussels, want to push this project further because you can't have Ottmar Issing, former governor of the Bundesbank, etc., said some years ago, there's no example in history of a lasting monetary union, that wasn't part of one state. And there are, of course, many examples of states that were monetary unions that have disappeared, like the USSR and so on. So you can't have a monetary union without common taxes and services. Common taxes and services don't exist because the solidarity that would underpin and make people willing to pay taxes to Brussels to transfer to weaker and poorer areas to compensate them for the inability to devalue their currency isn't there. So it's impossible political project. It was originally introduced, of course, to reconcile France to the reunification of Germany. In 1989, Germany was reunited overnight as a result of Gorbachev, etc. The French were very upset, so the Germans said, we'll give up the Deutschmark and share the running of this new European currency with you, the French. In return, we have a political union, which will have a common European foreign policy and a common European army and nuclear bomb down the road. Last Thursday, Chancellor Merkel said, we need to top up the monetary union with an economic and political union, and down the road there will be a European army. I showed you the quotation. Okay.
Dumfries Show on News Talk 106 to 108.
Anthony Coughlin, Mark in Cork says, Eamon, are you not even going to mention the economic benefits that we have received as a result of EU membership? For example, the roads. That's from a man who lives in a part of the country where you...
Swedes, the Danes, have roads. All have roads as well. We're talking about the Euro, the 16 countries in the Eurozone. And
answer for you, Mark.
We can be optimistic because the Euro currency, in my opinion, is doomed. It may not happen, it disappear tomorrow, but down the road, it's doomed because of its inherent contradictions.
How will it break up?
One can't be sure. Germany might well leave it. The best thing that could happen. Or Greece and or Portugal might be discharged from it as a result of the work of the international bond markets. But the fundamental real reality is coming through to people against all the forces of the Euro ideologues that countries need their own currencies. It's hugely important that a country has its own currency to enable it to balance its payments at a level which will maximise its output and employment. By joining the Eurozone, we gave up that power.
Richard, what do you say to that? Because you don't believe that, do you?
I don't believe that it's unworkable.
What Anthony's saying? Well, no, he's saying that a country needs its own currency in order to have the levers of its own economic...
We were pegged to sterling for most of our historical experience as a state. We didn't have...
Well, we had between 1993 and 2001.
We disengaged from the English pound in 1993.
The MS
Bertie Ahern, who's Minister of Finance, devalued, correct?
You sure know that?
That did lead to a period
of... Because, right, the point...
The
point that I would make is if Germany and France and the Netherlands and a couple of others are going to have a single currency themselves, if it's happening and we're not in it, which is part of the argument for going in, I think, you know, we would have been picked off by the hedge funds long before now. The question is whether or not, now that it's there, it is going to unravel and what the triggers for that might be.
Swedes don't think that.
Okay. I'd like to thank you all for coming in. We've got to the end of our time. We have to talk about sport after the break. I'd like to thank very much Gina Menzies, Richard Curran, Professor Bridget Laffin, and Anthony Coughlin. It's been a very stimulating and enjoyable hour and a half. As for optimism, I think not. Thank you very much. We're going to take an ad break now, and we'll see you later.
The Dumfries Show on News Talk 106 to 108.